May it please the court, I'm George Rosenberg, Assistant County Attorney, Arapahoe County, on behalf of the appellant respondent, Arapahoe County. The court has read the briefs, therefore I will proceed to the issue of the case. Whether the Board of Assessment Appeals, the BAA, erred as a matter of law by not following the statutory scheme for the valuation of real property for ad valorem purposes. The record supports a finding by this court, the BAA erred as a matter of law, and the BAA abused its discretion. The BAA failed to follow the statutory scheme for valuation of property for ad valorem purposes when the BAA considered unreasonable speculation as to the future use of the subject properties, failed to consider the actual use of the subject properties on the assessment date, and concluded to a value for non-existent property. The county seeks a remand of the case to the BAA to rehear the case in accordance with directions from this court to value the subject properties considering all evidence, including but not limited to the actual use of the subject properties on the assessment date, and not consider data beyond the statutory base year and or the assessment date.
Mr. Rosenberg, just let me interrupt and ask you procedurally. We're talking here about three cases.
That's correct, Your Honor.
So is it your view that all of the cases are, for all intents and purposes, identical?
As far as legal issues, yes, Your Honor.
Okay, I just want to make sure that that was clear. Thank you.
In simple and abbreviated terms, the statutory scheme for ad valorem valuation commences with the Colorado Constitution at Article 10, Section 3.1a, which mandates uniformity to secure just and equalized valuations. We've also cited Platinum Properties, 738 Pacific 2nd, 34 in our briefs. Allowing the BAA to value based on highly speculative projections will result in the lack of mandated equalized valuations. The statutory scheme enacted by the General Assembly requires that all taxable property within the state on January 1 of each year, designated as the official assessment date, shall be listed, appraised, and valued for assessment in the county wherein located on the assessment date. That's Section 39.1.105 CRS. The BAA in the subject cases abused its discretion by failing to follow the statutory scheme when the board valued the subject properties after the mandated assessment date. The BAA erred as a matter of law when it failed in this case to use the mandated base period method. As explained by this court in Padre Resort, cited in our briefs, the goal of the base period method is not to match appraised values with real economic values as closely as possible, but to secure just and equalized valuations. The court in Padre Resort went on to say that although the taxpayer in that case, like the taxpayer in this case, asserts otherwise, the fact that evaluations for other purposes, such as calculations of eminent domain damages, take projected conditions into consideration is immaterial here. That's Padre Resort at 815.
Mr. Rosenberg, didn't the Board of Assessment Appeals say that it was valuing all the properties in question as of the correct assessment date?
That is what they recited in their order, Your Honor.
However, but you're saying they didn't actually do that?
No, that's correct, Your Honor.
Why?
Well, in their orders, they said they were taking the data primarily from taxpayer's appraiser. And when you look at that appraisal, the conclusions, it's based on what's called a second generation use other than the actual property. The appraiser said, well, what you have to do is change the property as it actually exists. There will be some costs. Turn it from a single tenant user into a multi-tenant user. Change the entrance. Possibly change the parking pattern. In other words, significant and costly changes. And again, that's speculating and projecting.
Well, I'm sorry. I didn't interrupt you.
No, that's right.
I guess didn't they go down this road because of the unique nature of this being a Walgreens store? that's kind of an, in my terms, a niche. That's a very unique type of a store.
I don't believe that the record indicates that either appraiser, the counties or the taxpayers, considered this as a unique, or I believe in the appraisal field, what they would refer to as a special use or limited use property. It is a drugstore.
So it could be sold as a drugstore?
That is correct.
To who?
Well, in terms of selling the property as it exists, the property owner is not Walgreens. Walgreens is the tenant.
I understand.
So I'm the owner on Meadowbrook or Quebec,
I understand,
or East Street, and I wish to sell it. Whoever's going to buy it is going to buy it subject to the long-term lease held by Walgreens. So to, and that's perhaps where the problem comes in with taxpayers' novel approach, to say, well, let's look at it as if it were something else. Well, you really can't, because until Walgreens decides to basically let go of the property.
But didn't the lease term expire in 2013?
We had 18 different locations, and they would have varied. But essentially, you look at them as 50 to 75 year leases with minimum periods and then renewals thereafter. But probably what the record I think would show in looking at these specific properties is they varied. Some of them were brand new leases. Some were at the point where it would be up to Walgreens to decide whether they want to stay or move.
But the appraisal then would be based on somebody wanting a Walgreens?
I think the realities are it's somebody who wants an income stream. They're buying the property, if they're buying it to...
But they would have to maintain the lease with Walgreens, run a Walgreens.
Or negotiate something.
I understand.
Yes.
Mr. Rosenberg, if the testimony was that they couldn't buy it to another, or they couldn't sell it, excuse me, to another drugstore, wouldn't it be within the BAA's discretion then to consider it in its present condition for retail use?
Well, it's not that it couldn't be sold. It would be saleable subject to that lease.
But that's what the BAA considered the highest and best use. Is that not right?
No, I believe what the BAA said is look at it as a different use, what's called the second generation, that you look at it, say, to be used by a, I know they're going out of business, but I'll still use them as an example, the old Blockbusters, or a possibly a liquor store or some other type of retail use. But it can certainly be used as a drugstore.
Didn't the Board of Assessment Appeals say in its decisions that a sale of the property to another drugstore would be the best way to determine value, but that that wasn't possible here because none of these drugstores was able to be sold to other drugstores?
That's what the board said, but there are plenty of sales in Colorado of Walgreens. The data is there. The board, I believe, boxed themselves in by saying, well, we can't look at that. The reality is that Walgreens is the market. They make the market on these types of properties. And for whatever reasons, the board decided that they can't look at that. And so in effect, they denied themselves data which they could have used and would have supported their position.
Well, I'm confused. Are you saying that there was a testimony from either of the experts that regarding drugstores like the ones here being sold to other drugstore chains or to other companies that wanted to operate a drugstore?
With respect to Colorado, no, it was actually the opposite because of the restriction that Walgreens imposed. They said, if we're going to enter into this lease on Meadowbrook's property, then we want a clause in there that it can't be leased, subleased, sold to another drugstore chain.
To a competitor.
Correct. In effect, it's kind of antitrust restraint, monopoly, however you want to characterize it.
So given those restrictions, then, what is your theory about how the BAA should have valued the properties in question?
Well, at a minimum, they should have considered data regarding other Walgreens, certainly in Colorado, and probably nationally.
And what's the authority for that? What's your authority for that, that they should have?
Well, that in doing their job, they didn't follow the statutory scheme, and that would have been, okay, the cutoff of the data. Now we're talking about the mandated base year period. We're talking about the uniformity, the equalization, starting with the Constitution and then the various statutory provisions that we have cited. What they did in effect was, this is similar to what happened in Padre Resort, where the taxpayer attempted to project, to speculate, and this court said, based on the statutes, Constitution, you can't do that. The part of the problem is, and I'm not here to defend or attack or put a value judgment on our statutory scheme, but in terms of the real world, in the private fee appraisal world, you don't have base year, you don't have kind of these artificial restraints, but these are the rules as handed down by the legislature. And that's what everybody has to play by.
And our Supreme Court in the Arlberg case seemed to lay out some standards, and you don't think those should apply here?
No, I believe they do apply. Part of the problem is you use the terminology, highest and best use is a term of art in the appraisal world. It shows up in the legal world. But sometimes the interpretations can, the two different professions perhaps have a different understanding. I think what our Supreme Court said in Arlberg is, yes, we're a highest and best use state, but with a limitation. And they emphasized, they added the phrase, in its present condition. And I think that clearly means, well, what is it at the time, the assessment date, as a term of art, the base period as a term of art, or more than a term of art, as the law. This court in Padre Resort cited Arlberg and Carrara Place in declaring that although assessors must engage in some speculation, they are statutorily bound to rely only on conditions existing in the base period. That's Padre Resort at 816. The Colorado Supreme Court in Arlberg cited Carrera at 148. There's much discussion in the record and the briefs regarding the highest and best use. The operative word in highest and best use is highest. The county agrees with the BAA when it states in its answer brief at page 16 that the highest and best use is the use that results in the highest value, citing the appraisal of real estate 13th edition. Here, it's kind of a curious result. The BAA applied the highest and best use standard and ended up with a lower value. That somehow doesn't make much sense.
Well, didn't the BAA conclude that that was because of the peculiar financial arrangement that Walgreens entered into with investors?
Well, there's nothing peculiar about that arrangement or that lease. Those are done, you have that for your big box stores, for your fast food chains. Basically, Or you see the term build-to-suit lease or above-market lease and so on. Every lease, in reality, is a build-to-suit lease. If depending on whether you're the owner or a purchaser or single tenant, the lease is going to be customized or built-to-suit. The BAA committed legal error applying highest and best use when it concluded for a lower value by accepting and relying on a novel method evolved by taxpayers' appraiser. The novel method was to suspend reality and value a future speculative second-generation use despite the undisputed actual existence of a long-term first-generation use. At the first BAA hearing of the three cases now before the court, on cross-examination by both the county and the BAA, taxpayers' appraiser conceded and the BAA acknowledged on the record that the BAA must consider the actual use of the subject properties as of January 1, the assessment date. The Oliver Court at page 153 cites Allied Stores, Inc. versus Finance Administrator, where a New York court stated, it is not permissible to determine that a property's actual use was no longer viable and to value it as though it had been used as something other than its actual use. However, the BAA concludes to a value for a hypothetical use and totally disregards the existing use of the subject properties as fee simple properties subject to a long-term lease by a national drugstore chain. As noted in the briefs, neither the Colorado State Constitution nor Colorado Revised Statutes mentions the term highest and best use. The applicable guidelines of the Colorado Division of Property Taxation, known as the Assessor's Reference Library, which are not binding upon county boards of equalization or the BAA, references the Oliver case. However, the division limits the application to vacant land valuations.
Mr. Rosenberg, you said in your reply brief that the preface to volume three of the assessor's manual refers or limits it, that to vacant land, but I didn't see that limitation in the preface. Can you direct us to where that's stated?
Yes, in the, let me have a moment here. I'm looking at the Quebec Village Partners. That's the first docket in my opening brief. In the addendum, there's a copy of the preface. And this was the preface that was in effect at the relevant time period for this case. The second paragraph, and I'm quoting, the purpose of ARL Volume 3 is to provide a reference source for appraisal and assessment policies and procedures for the valuation of land according to the Colorado Constitution and statutes.
But that doesn't say vacant land.
That's correct, Your Honor. However, it's been my experience, and I believe those, the assessors, the court, boards of equalization, the BAA, and so forth, when referring to volume three, they refer to it for purposes of valuing vacant land.
Well, that may well be, and you certainly have more experience than I do in this area, but I just didn't see the phrase vacant land in the preface there.
That's correct, Your Honor. It doesn't say vacant land. It just says land. The county believes the Supreme Court, our Supreme Court, emphasized the in its present condition limitation. just as in statutory interpretation, courts give meaning and application to each word in a court declaration of the law. If the Colorado Supreme Court emphasized language in its determination of the law, then it must be important, and we would contend it needs to be enforced. As the record shows, the BAA and its desire to reduce the number of hearings of the taxpayer petitions of properties with long-term national drugstore chain leases from 18 to 3 ordered the parties to group the subject 18 dockets by age, resulting in an oldest, middle, and newest group, respectively. The respective decisions are inconsistent with each other. The respective decisions by the BAA are, and I use this as a term of art in administrative law, an absurd result. These subject decisions are illogical, they're confusing, and they're not a helpful guidance to the parties. Specifically, the final value of $152 per square foot determined and ordered by the BAA for the middle group of properties is significantly lower than the final value of $175 per square foot for the oldest group. The BAA's order, as well as the record, shows that when they set up the groups were based, it was essentially one criteria, and that was age. So it's just illogical that a newer group, the middle group, would be worth less than the older group. Again, that result violates the constitutional mandate of just and equalized valuations. I'd like to reserve the balance of my time, unless there's some questions at this time.
You have just over 8 minutes.
Thank you.
May it please the court, my name is Kendra Harrison. I am shown on the briefs as Kendra Goldstein, as they were entered prior to my marriage. My attorney registration number is 40136, and I represent the Appalese, Meadowbrook Falls, OBK Aurora, and Quebec Village Partners. First, I'd like to address the standard of review here. The BAA is the finder of fact, and its findings must not be disturbed unless their determination reflects a failure to abide by the statutory scheme. As has been referenced, the statutory scheme designates that if it is commercial property, which this is not disputed, that these are commercial properties, then we are to consider the three methods of approaching value, which are the income approach, the cost approach, and the market approach. These three approaches were considered by the board in its determination of what the market value of the property should be. In no case did they stray from the statutory scheme in determining what the value is. And as the board is the administrative body charged with the interpretation and of applying their expertise to this situation, their findings may not be disturbed. The facts are not in dispute here. It's really only a matter of whether or not they violated the statutory scheme. The board considered the property's current use, as well as its reasonable future use, in its present condition when they determined the actual value. This is supported by Arlberg. The board, when determining the value of these properties, they looked at what the condition of the property was as of the relevant assessment date, which was January 1st, 2011 and 2012, in the marketplace as of June 30th, 2010. All of the data that they relied upon in determining what the value should be was all within the constraints as established by statute and case law within the relevant data collection period. In no event did they look at economic factors outside of the relevant data collection period, which is what the case in Padre relates to. It does not relate to what happened in this particular scenario. Padre was looking at economic factors that went well beyond that of the actual valuation date. There it was looking at vacancy allowances and what the vacancy was during the relevant data collection period and thereon. Under no circumstances did the board consider information, economic information, beyond that of the relevant data collection period. What they did is they looked at what the actual property was in its sticks and bricks condition, what the real estate was, the land and the improvements as of the valuation and assessment dates, and they determined that the highest and best use of that property was of as a general retail facility. The ARL in volume 2 designates the appropriate classifications for value. I'm sorry, the appropriate classifications for property. What the properties at issue in these cases fall under are commercial properties, and the subcategory to that is merchandising. That those are the limitations, and that's what the ARL directs you to do. There are no subclassifications for first generation or second generation, as the appellant would like you to believe. If you're looking at first generation, second generation, it's a slippery slope to go into leased fee versus fee simple. What we're charged with in determining what the market value of a property is for ad valorem purposes is what a property would sell for on the relevant date between a willing buyer and willing seller under no undue duress in the marketplace.
And that's in its present condition.
In its present condition, absolutely. In its present condition, the properties were as general, they were retail facilities. If you have two properties that are identical, let's say exact same, construction, year of construction, quality, exact same design, exact same location, so you have one occupied by a national credit tenant such as Walgreens, and one occupied by a local mom and pop auto parts store. The values should be the same under fee simple analysis. They should not be differing values based on the tenant in place. To do so would be a leased fee analysis, and you'd be valuing the leasehold interest of the property.
That's assuming the properties, if I understand you right, are in the same current condition, that one's not
correct,
broken or right, run down or something.
Absolutely. If you're talking about the same condition, they should be valued the same. It shouldn't matter who the tenant is. If it's Walgreens, if it's Goodwill, if it's a local auto parts store, you're supposed to value the land and the improvements. And that's what the board did.
Ms. Harrison, as I understand Mr. Rosenberg's argument, he's saying that the BAA didn't consider the values of other Walgreens stores.
I disagree. I think that they did. What the problem is that the board considered all the information as provided by both petitioner and respondent in its case. And the problem is that the majority of those sales of Walgreens, as Mr. Rosenberg indicated, it's mainly developers or investors buying the Walgreens buildings with Walgreens leases still in place. Well, due to the unique nature of the Walgreens built suit and their business model, what happens is Walgreens finds a developer or a developer finds Walgreens, and the developer goes and they find the location of where that Walgreens should go. Then they go and they acquire the property, they demolish any improvements that they're existing, they build the building to Walgreens specifications, and then they lease it back to them not only for market rent, but also for costs of that acquisition, demolition, construction, and of course then a fee to make it worth their while. So if someone is buying that property that's occupied by Walgreens and that lease in place, they're buying all of the reimbursement for those costs and the incentive to finance the whole project. Those aren't market rents. And what the board is charged with in determining actual market is what are market rents in the real estate marketplace. As I mentioned, I don't believe that Padre is applicable here because the economic conditions that the board relied on were as of the relevant valuation date. In no instance was any of the data presented by either witness leading to details that went beyond the relevant data collection period. So in my opinion, Padre is not relevant, and it has no bearing in this particular scenario. Mr. Rosenberg also mentioned the assessor's reference library volume 3 and is trying to argue that Arlberg is limited only to vacant land. I agree with Judge Shaman that it is not limited to vacant land. Of course, volume 3 does say land, but it's not limited to vacant land, nor is Arlberg in any way limited to vacant land. There's nothing within that holding that indicates that it's limited solely to the application of vacant land.
It did address vacant land.
The case did have to do with vacant land. It did. It absolutely had to do with vacant land. That case also quoted the appraisal of real estate, and the appraisal of real estate has defined, the appraisal of real estate has defined highest and best use, of which the court relied on. And in that definition from the appraisal of real estate, they, and I believe this is also, we provided this as an exhibit to our brief as well, the definition is the use from among reasonably probable and legal alternative uses found to be physically possible, appropriately supported, and financially feasible as applied to both vacant and improved properties. There's nothing that limits this solely to vacant land. And I'd like to point out that even though Volume 3 does address land, nothing within Volume 3 is limited solely to land and has no application to improved property either. If you look through Volume 3, there's reference to the cost approach and the income approach, which are certainly relevant to improved properties. Generally, they don't have much use for vacant properties. But if you were to make the assumption that just because it's contained within Volume 3 of the land manual, that it would not apply to improved properties, you'd wipe out two of the three relevant valuation methods for determining what actual value should be for a property. Furthermore, as is shown in the preface to Volume 3, Volume 4 is supposed to address the valuation of real property. It's not been published yet. It's speculative to say that, you know, Volume 4, when addressing the valuation of real property, would not adopt the consideration of highest and best use. I think it's very limiting what the county is trying to do here, and it's nonsensical in a way as well. If you were to take current use only and completely disregard highest and best use, then I think you would be doing a pretty major disservice to some of the counties throughout the state who have parking lots downtown between two high-rise buildings. I mean, would you want to value them solely based on the income stream derived from a parking lot as opposed to their highest and best use? To me, I wouldn't think that that would be the appropriate way to do it. And it also is contrary to what we're trying to do here with valuing, determining what the market value is. Highest and best use and the market and market value, they really do go hand in hand. The court in Arlberg stated that a property's highest and best use is relevant to determination of price on which a willing buyer and seller would agree for property in its present condition. Well, that is the definition of what market value is, according to the appraisal of real estate, and it's been adopted by the court in Arlberg. And that's exactly what the BAA did here. They looked at what the property was in its present condition on the valuation date and on the assessment dates. They determined that it was general retail. They're the finders of facts. They are the expertise. They have the expertise to make that determination, and it should not be disturbed absent a gross,
Well, Mr. Rosenberg points out that obviously they didn't adopt the highest use.
Well, the highest use, according to Mr. Rosenberg, is of a drugstore specifically, and I think that, again, that flies in the face of what the assessor's reference library mandates in Volume 2. In Volume 2, and I'm referencing what was supplied within our brief, on page 6.1, it shows the various property classes. This falls under commercial. And then on page 6.29, when going through various property classes, it discusses merchandising. Under merchandising, you're going to have everything from drug and liquor stores to meat and fish markets to jewelry stores, to coin-op laundries. So to try and pigeonhole this into valuing a drugstore just because that is what the tenant was in place, again, I think goes to a leased fee valuation, which is contrary to what the court determined in the City of County of Denver versus the Board of Assessment Appeals. That's not what we're charged with determining. And I think that to do so, to look at specifically the tenant in place and how the property is being used, and to go beyond that of general retail, is really going down that leased fee analysis. And that's really what the county presented at the Board of Assessment Appeals hearing. And the board determined in their findings that the adjustments were not significant enough to take it really from a leased fee analysis to a fee simple analysis. And in looking at the fee simple analysis, what we need to do is look at what the property would either sell or lease for on the open market as of the valuation date. And the board determined that as of the valuation date, the property in its highest and best use, which is the same as its current use, it's a general retail facility. And they determined what the value should be in that instance. Couple of other things that I'd like to address. As I mentioned, you know, the board's ruling was not speculative. In the order, they did state the determination of market value for the property, quote, if it were available on the open market for sale or lease as of June 30th, 2010, would be to a single tenant retail user, which is reflective of the, quote, existing use. They value the land and they value the improvement in their physical, in their present physical condition. In making its determination of what the property should be, the board, of course, did look to see the condition of the property in its physical, in its present physical condition, and they determined there could be functional obsolescence based on the design. It's not speculative to say that based on the property in its present condition, if it were on the marketplace, there may need to be adjustments to attract another user. That's still considering what it would be in its current physical condition. In no way did they go beyond that of the statutory scheme and the data collection period as described in statute and as supported by case law. As I mentioned, someone that would be buying the property with the Walgreens in place would also be buying those rights that come with that of the reimbursement. I mean, they would be buying everything that came through that the developer had a right to with respect to costs of, you know, demolition and construction. And one thing that I'd like to note is that one of the things that the taxpayer's witness did present was the sale of a vacant Walgreens on the marketplace. When all of a sudden you've got the tenant out of there, what is that property worth? Well, we had a sale of a property within the relevant time frame, and that's something that the board considered. I mean, really what we're looking at here is the board did not stray from the statutory requirements. They considered the approaches to value. It was a commercial property. They limited their review to the statutory time frame that they needed to. And it was their determination based on the consideration. They get to weigh the facts. They can give various evidence the weight that it deems appropriate. And based on all the evidence presented, of which they considered it all, they gave the weight that they deemed was appropriate to determine their own value. They didn't come to petitioner's value. They didn't, you know, follow ours to a T. They relied on our data presented because our data was not a leased fee data. It presented market data and analysis, and they, as the finder of fact, that was within their guidelines and what they're supposed to do under the administrative charge that they have. I'd also like to point out that really the term of art of first generation versus second generation is one of the appellants. The board fairly consistently really did refer to this property as a general retail facility. If the court has any further questions, I'd like to reserve the remaining of time for Ms. Leakey with the Attorney General's office. Thank you.
If you want to go ahead, I'm going to try to get this back in up because it stops.
May it please the court, my name is Tricia Leakey and my attorney registration number is 39942. I'm here representing the Board of Assessment Appeal. There seems to be a little bit of a problem here with my captioning. So if you could wave, I'll try to lip read and see your questions, if any.
We can wait a minute if you think you can get it working.
You can go ahead and I'll do my best to get it working.
Okay, that's fine.
It's not clear how long it'll take. So,
that's fine.
The Board of Assessment Appeals did not err as a matter of law by failing to abide by the statutory scheme. The argument made by the county appears to be that current use is defined strictly by who is in place at the time of the valuation. But the case law and the statute does not go so narrowly. In the Arlberg case, they pointed out that the Colorado Supreme Court adopted a view that we are looking at the open market and valuation is driven by considerations of the open market and how property would be exchanged on the open market. When you look at the three approaches to valuation, the cost approach considers the property as if it were vacant and then considers the cost of replacement or new improvements on that property minus depreciation. Right there's already a departure from what's actually on that property toward thinking about what the market is willing to pay and what market, how the market bears on the property. Here, valuing the subject property strictly in terms of being a drugstore would be straying from the case law and the statutory command. So in Arlberg also is not so limited to vacant land. In Arlberg, the property that issue was vacant, but the Colorado Supreme Court said you can consider the highest and best use of the land, even though it's not, it doesn't have condominiums on it, it is slated for that potential development. And so you consider that when you're valuing the property, you're not limited to just considering it as vacant land. The BAA here considered the property, taking into account all the evidence that was put before them. They were given data about Walgreens stores, and they looked carefully at the data about Walgreens stores, and pretty much felt that a lot of that data was not reflective of the open market, was concerned about location. The properties, the subject properties here, were in excellent locations or very good location. And the Walgreens data that was before the board didn't necessarily reflect that reality. And we've all heard that expression, location, location, location. That's really very critical in valuing property. So the board did not err in looking at that data. It was open to considering the data, but in the end, using its expertise, determined that it was not quite appropriate given the characteristics, the demographics of the subject properties in question. I just wanted to address the issues about the assessor's reference library, volume 3. Ms. Harrison already addressed that. There is a specific chapter dedicated to valuation of vacant land, but the remainder of the manual looking at how you value real property, and under statutory section 39.1.102, real property is defined based on land or interest in land, mine, quarries, mineral, and the improvements on the property. Those are all the characteristics that are taken into account in valuation. Another thing that the county raised was that it was illogical as a result that the valuations on the properties came out differently and wasn't driven by the age of the property. But again, that is driven by the characteristics of the subject property and the location that was at issue. So it is not illogical to consider the actual characteristics of the property and age, or the age of the building, is not necessarily the driving consideration. At this point, I have nothing further to add, but I would like to take any questions if there are any. Well, I guess I'm lucky there weren't any, because I couldn't maybe hear them. Thank you very much.
The county would point out with regard to this claim by taxpayer that there was a lease fee analysis. The board in its order found that both parties performed a fee simple appraisal of the subject properties. Thus, lease fee analysis is really not an issue here. Allberg, as pointed out in the taxpayer's response, you could distinguish factually because it was vacant land. And I think that was the problem that the Supreme Court had to struggle with in part, was, well, a current use valuation of vacant land, that's a problem. Because unless you're in the market, say, for open space, normally you buy vacant land to do something with it. So to value it, and that's why, and I think the concurring opinion of the late former Chief Justice Erickson might have been a better explanation when he said, well, yeah, you can open it up a little bit, but you have to be very careful, and it has to be very limited. And it's certainly for purposes of Allberg, if we limit it to that case, it makes total sense. But on an improved property, there would appear to be less of a need for this future projection or speculation, particularly when you have a property subject to a long-term lease.
Well, how do you address Ms. Harrison's argument that this was appraised as a general retail facility merchandising, and that fits within the ARL, I believe, 6.29?
Because if you look at the, and this was based on the taxpayers' appraisers' testimony and report, if you look at his conclusions, he says, well, it's better suited as a general retail use with the following requirements. And that's where he points out you're going to have to spend some money. This was the problem that Erickson had, and actually even in Justin Malarkey's part of the opinion, that how do you know how much you will have to spend for this hypothetical future use? That's the problem. and that's where I think it flies in the face.
But that would be a price on which a willing buyer and seller would agree for the property in its present condition. That comes out of the Arlberg case. I mean, is that not how you arrive at that?
The way the county reads the statutory scheme, no, that you have to deal with what is fact as of a certain time. Because otherwise, you're going to end up with, you can't have uniformity and equalization if you do highest and best use. Because if I get six MAI appraisers in this room and tell them, do a highest and best use analysis on this particular property, they're going to come up with different possibilities.
So you don't think highest and best use would have any application? You want to just focus on the actual current use?
That's our position, yes.
And give me the legal authority to support that.
Well, again, starting with the Constitution, which mandates uniformity, mandates equalization, then, of course, the Constitution defers to the General Assembly to flesh it out in terms of the mechanics. Mm-hmm. The General Assembly set up the statutory scheme, the two key parts of that being the mandated assessment date, January 1 of the relevant year, and the base period methodology.
But they also said market value.
Yes, but you have to harmonize that, and that's
well, but I'm trying to understand your position, because if they we could say it's harmonized by calling this a general retail facility, doesn't that get us there?
Well,
the merchandising type of a property?
But why do we even have to go there? And I think the statutory scheme prohibits you from going there. If you have the facts, you know exactly what is there on June 30th in terms of the market data collection. You know what is there in terms of its use and physical condition on January 1, the mandatory assessment date, because it says it's going to be listed, valued.
But a market value, you would have to find a buyer to take over a Walgreens store. Doesn't that limit it too much? That's what I was trying to get to when I talked about that idea of a niche, that doesn't seem to represent a market value.
There is a market for these type properties. People
a
want,
big market?
I'm sorry?
A big market? I had understood from the record.
Nationally, yes. I think the, for example.
Well, there's a lot of Walgreens. I get that. That's in the record.
And also, this is the way the Walgreens set themselves up. But the focus is, it's not on Walgreens. The focus is, look, this is a fee appraisal, and we're looking at properties that are subject to these long-term leases from national chain tenants. And yes, that's a market. Walgreens is the market. Certainly in Colorado, for these types of properties. That is, fee simples subject to a long-term national drugstore lease. You don't find very many, if any, CVS. You find a few Rite Aids, and that's essentially the national drugstore chain market in this country, those three chains. There are a few others here and there. You go to other jurisdictions, CVS dominates, Rite Aid in some places, but the board didn't want to consider the actual rents in this case. In the City and County of Denver case, or sometimes known as Regis or Kmart, our Supreme Court basically said the BAA needs to or has to consider both the actual as well as the market lease rates. The mention of the vacant Walgreens property, It was just that. It was a Walgreens property, and it became other than what the subject was.
I see you're out of time.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, counsel, for your excellent arguments. The cases will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.